Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 9, Episode 7, titled Stradivarius. Aaron, who is Stradivarius?
I guess this is a family of Italian, I'm going to guess, your people. Violin makers in the 17th and 18th century that were fairly famous for making high-quality violins and materials. These violins that have survived to this day in good condition can fetch anywhere from $100,000 to upwards of $50 million, depending on, again, its age, condition, what style Stradivarius it is. And they're highly prized for what some violinists say is a superior, unreproducible sound. This appears...
Yeah, I've seen this episode. I'm going to say superior, unreproducible sound is not its forte, but... So maybe a bit of a misnomer.
It also is terrible against katanas.
Yeah.
Its combat value is very, very low. A crowbar would be better to have than a Stradivarius in this circumstance. But I got bored and I did a bunch of reading on Stradivarius's.
While you were watching the episode?
No.
You got bored? No.
Yeah, after. I was doing some reading on it, and I guess that it's a fairly modern contention that Stradivarius don't sound any better than a high-end guitar manufactured, high-end violin that's manufactured today. Like, there's been multiple double-blind experiments. Of course, purists will dispute those facts.
It makes sense. Shit gets better. We get better at making things over the years, and we've had 200, 300 years.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like, I guess there was some particular special qualities of the wood that Stradivarius used, and there was the little ice age caused trees to grow slower and denser and to be more resonant. But you know what? We fucking x-rayed these things and then spectral analysis on them, and we can make equally dense wood.
I think IKEA flat pack Stradivarius now.
I think they do. They're $49.99.
Right.
They're Bluetooth capable.
So what do you think of this episode?
I thought there's a lot of stuff that's good. I think that I am a little getting a little kind of tired of how long they're stretching out this mystery of why the communities have been fractured, and it appears to have something to do with that X-shaped kidney donation scar that Michonne and Daryl have. And I'm also a little tired of the fucking new guys and girls, the FNGs, and their constant vacillating. I guess it's not constant. It's one person who's a hothead and wants to fuck this up for the group. Or maybe she's the smart Shane one that's like, I've seen this thing and we're going to end up in a cattle car and we're going to get eaten alive at the Hilltop restaurant. And then everybody else who's kind of opposing her, and that's getting a little old. But I'm still the central conflict I'm here for. I like the idea actually of Daryl kind of being the ward, or I guess Henry being the ward to Daryl and kind of being raised up by him. And I think it's going to backfire on Carol. I think that Henry might lose a little bit of his, what do you call it, idealism. But I think some of that's going to rub off on Daryl too, and kind of him. Get him out of his feral Daryl phase that he's stuck in. What do you think of it?
I mean, it definitely seems to be having an effect on Daryl. I mostly like it. I didn't have I had one huge problem, but it's minor in the grand scheme of Walking Dead problems. But you know, it's. I'm not sure how I feel about them spooling out this mystery of, you know, Maggie and Michonne and the scars. I think the scars were actually pretty well done. Not from a special effects angle, but from a storytelling angle. They're fostering some effective mystery here.
I'm genuinely curious.
What are these X's about? I was curious when I saw it on Michonne. I was like, what's that about? But Daryl?
Yeah.
I know you can capture and hurt Daryl. It's been done in the past.
Sure.
But why? Okay. Why is he feral? Why has he gone back to nature? how, if he's gone back to nature, it must have happened like after these scars. I've got all these questions swimming around in my head about.
And apparently, these scars. It started with him searching for Rick, which we kind of surmised he might do. But he's been doing it for like what, 4 fucking years now.
But if that's the case, how did he get the scars?
And why is everybody mad at Maggie? Did like.
Yeah.
Glenn Jr.
Well, it seems like Maggie might have got in a huff. Honestly, I'm wondering if Jesus got appointed leader after people weren't agreeing with Maggie and she was just like, fine, I'm going to take my baby and go home.
Well, and I was like, did Glenn Jr. need like a double kidney transplant and she took Michonne and Daryl's and then stiffed them, like just ran off of Georgie? Because that's the other thing that doesn't quite make sense, the fact that Michonne would not know that Maggie had left the Hilltop.
Yeah, it says somebody is not telling her, you know, Sadiq, aside from being a huge gossip, obviously, kept this information from her, just like everybody else. So, yeah, who, I don't know. It's an intriguing state for this
community. And when did it happen? Because Jesus has won at least his second. This is a re-election, not an election. Like, Maggie didn't leave. And so, like, how long have they been keeping this from Michonne? Is that believable, realistic? Like I said, I am curious, but like not that curious. And if they stretch it out like past the mid-season break, it's gonna start feeling tedious for me. But
absolutely,
I don't know.
Absolutely, and there's a little bit of like there's a threat in my mind here, a looming threat that we might go back to a lot of Morgulizing if this schism is over Negan somehow.
Yeah.
I don't think it is. I think there's something else here with the election, with Jesus, with all that. But if this schism between the Hilltop and Alexandria is over Negan and what to do with him, I'm going to be real disappointed that has been going on for X amount of years. Mm-hmm. And also, I thought they dealt with it before this time jump. I thought like the Maggie and Michonne scene where she's like, okay, do what you got to do. And she changes her mind. I thought that was all over with. So hopefully that is not where we are headed.
Yeah, like we've often... Wasn't it the Expanse that I said that or no? It's the Deuce. It's something that David Simon and George Pelicanos do so well because they do time jumps. Like every year, the Deuce has 3 seasons. Every year, it flashes forward 5 to 7 years. But what they do a really good job in the finale episode of like putting characters on a particular trajectory, they have a direction and velocity, so when you catch up with them in the next season, everything kind of tracks. It's like, oh well, this person is on a downward spiral and oh my god, they're either dead or they're in a real destitute position. This person is on the upswing and now they've moved to LA and they're doing this. Whereas you're right, like the trajectories that like Michonne and Maggie were put on before the time jump was one of like comity and coming together and like understanding each other's perspective and like resolving to make good on Rick's sacrifice. These do not track with the trajectory that we caught them back in after the time jump. And I'm just wondering, you know, what is it? What, you know, like how they get these scars? What is the threat? It can't involve Negan because Negan's in jail. I don't think it involves the Saviors because we found that the Savior complex collapsed. And there didn't seem to be a special venom between like Carol. Like Carol didn't treat these guys like, you fuckers tore out Michonne and Daryl's kidney and I'm going to want you dead. It was more of just like, yeah, you guys failed and fucked off. We haven't heard you from you for a while.
Yeah.
What is this? What is this threat that's happening?
I don't know.
Someone go crazy? Was there some faction within the Hilltop or Alexandria itself that did this? I don't know.
Yeah, but like I said, I'm the Walking Dead interested in this.
Yes,
not it's, the Deuce it's weird interested.
It's weird that that's more interesting than like these whispering zombies. Which are still a thing.
They haven't done much with the whispering zombies. Like they've got Rosita in the woods, which we'll talk about here in a second. And they had, you know, the scene from last episode, but
it's wild that Rosita is not the first thing that she said. Oh my God, I've been hunted to exhaustion by whispering zombies. Am I going crazy? It's like, you know, it's like maybe she's out of it. She needs an IV or whatever.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I was really expecting her to say, I was waiting to see what everyone's reaction to this news is going to be. They didn't get a reaction because there was no news out of Rosita. Maybe next week she'll be up and at him. Sadiq will minister her back to health.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. They sent their only doctor on a away mission, so I guess not the only doctor. Enid's shaping up into a fine young doctor.
Yeah, she's had 4 years of flash forwarding medical. That's medical school right there.
Yeah,
Boom. Got plenty of corpses you can disassemble.
I guess they're dissect.
It's not called disassembling when it's a corpse. It's dissecting it. Yeah.
Disassembling the human body.
Johnny Five would be outraged.
Okay, let's get into the recap. We start off with a very tired Bloody Rosita, as we mentioned, running through the woods from unseen walkers who are whispering all around her until she finally collapses, and that's the scene. Then we go to the intro.
I get again, I don't know anything about this storyline. Like I quit reading at exactly this point.
Yeah,
same. But I think it's interesting that they're essentially, it's almost like they're hunting her, like with a very primitive, have you heard of like exhaustion hunting? You know, like, I guess this is how primitive humans did most of their killing, is they would pick out, they would isolate an animal from the herd and then walk it into and use our superior endurance and perspiration, cooling ability to just essentially walk an animal to death on a savanna. Like you walk, you stalk a zebra for a couple hours and, you know, you get within 100 feet and it runs off spooked. You just keep walking, and eventually it's heart and lungs and it overheats and it collapses and you come up there and you kill it. I don't understand why you would do that to a human and how it would work so rapidly. You know, I feel like Rosita, like with that big ass jug of water, she could have, like, you know, with the average zombie shamble, could keep that up for at least a day, if not two, before collapsing.
Certainly long enough to get back to civilization.
Yeah, and why would you use that hunting technique against a human? Like, are these whisper zombies some sort of cannibal? I don't know.
Yeah, so I know what the whisperers are, and so I can't say much of anything here because we're not in the spoiler section. And yes, I know we're two seasons behind the show.
Yeah,
but
see, I'm comfortable with talking about like their, because I don't know anything about their actual nature, but like I'm pretty comfortable saying that this is not some intelligent zombie.
Okay,
right? Like I would not surmise that from. Like this is not some new breed of zombie that's just, you know, retained their brains or something, or some kind of evolution in zombie culture. So I'm assuming that's my base assumption about it.
Okay. Let's move on to Daryl, taking Carol and Henry to his trapper camp on the river, and Carol's concerned about him. I call this a trapper camp because he's got a lot of skins.
He's tanning a lot of skins.
But I don't know where those skins are going, because he's got a poncho. What does a man with a poncho need with skins?
Yep. His boat is not covered in animal hides.
His crossbow, maybe? Is he like making a pistol grip for the crossbow?
He's wearing boots. He's not wearing, like, I thought he might be wearing moccasins or something. Here's another thing. He has a stack of giant books by his...
Kindling.
I'm wondering, because they were by the fireplace, and I'm like, is Daryl just reading these massive encyclopedias or books on the law? Because they're not like novels or anything. They're like giant reference books. They're like 2 inches thick. Is he using that to start fires with or what? But like my notes say, Daryl's camp, traps everywhere. He's been reading big books and tanning hides, and he's got a dog and a boat that he hasn't fixed. But that boat is on like a small stream. Like, I'm just like... I was wanting to know, because I feel like Daryl's a very smart man and he would have a very cool place set up in his neck of the woods. And like, I'm like, is this some kind of rapid like zombie escape? Like if the zombies catch him, he can just go to the other side of the creek and get away. But if that's the case, why is it broke? Does it matter if it's broke? It's like 30 feet to the other side, man. It's like, what's broke about a couple logs lashed together? Right. Step on it, push off to shore. 15 seconds later, you're on the other side.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's interesting stuff.
Good questions. He also has a dog, which they don't do anything with here, but I'm assuming that will come into play later.
We've talked about this over the years. People lose their shit when a dog's... It's like dogs and babies, man. So like they don't have Judith to shove in a cooler anymore. So you got a dog, you get a doggo in the middle of a ring of zombies, and like, man, the fucking audience's adrenaline jacked. So
yeah, I guess we don't know. Are there any babies left? Like, I forgot Herschel's actually going to be like 7 years old now.
He's going to be like four or five at the least. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming there's still people are making babies.
It's we just haven't seen any. And it's none of the main characters have babies at this point.
Yeah. Oh, Michonne has like that toddler, Rick Jr.
I guess that's a baby. That's a pretty big baby.
It is. Like I said, I think he's four or five now. So yeah, it's maybe a baby with relative terms. But yeah, there's got to be babies. Maybe Daryl's making fur-lined bassinets, shipping them back to Alexandria.
They for all the babies.
Throw them in the river like Moses' basket, and it floats down to Alexandria. Oh, look, anonymous benefactors spun us a baby gift. So there you go.
I buy it. All right, we're on the road to the hilltop. Sadiq ribs Michonne for not just keeping the new survivors in Alexandria when she clearly likes them. The new group argues about their current situation. Some are happy. Others are looking for their options here. One of them recounts a bad... shirt?
Yeah.
That one of them... That's in my notes? That can't be right. I don't remember this scene well enough, but that can't be right.
He wore a horrible shirt that, if I recall, was like staring into creation itself if it was Paisley.
Okay, and they do this just so that when he shows back up later...
Yeah. This is a first for The Walking Dead. We have seen many times them spin an elaborate backstory and character detail, rich character detail for a character who's going to be killed in this episode in a vain attempt for us to feel something. This is entirely uncharted territory. They're doing a bizarre, colorful backstory for a man who's already dead and we never will know or meet, just so we can vicariously feel the horror of this Magda woman that we've just barely met and got to know. We have no idea what her backstory is, other than when she went to jail and at some point, and she likes knives.
It's at least an attempt at you know, getting us to empathize with these characters and understand their plight.
Walking Dead pioneering rapid deployment storytelling. Like it's like one of those pop-up tents. They just throw it on the ground. Here's a fucking cardboard standout character for you to empathize with.
Fly overhead and airdrop in some plot support.
You got to be precise on those call-outs or, you know, might land on a main character and he'll get blown off a bridge. So you gotta watch it. You gotta watch it. That's how you lose an Andrew Lincoln.
So they recount the story about his bad shirt, and they ask about the hilltop. Michonne isn't super interested in giving them details about anything. Then we get to my biggest problem with this entire episode. It's a scene where Tara is taking care of business in the apocalypse. She delivers a list of people who need a piece of Jesus, so that he can make some decisions on it. He's impatient with the process, and he leaves to do the least objectionable thing on the list. That's all fine. My problem here is the opening of this scene. It's got a cool drone shot that I really liked, the overhead, seeing like all the crops that they're growing at the hilltop and how that's been kind of building out. It's the music. The music is like, it's this second tier Christian rock band. Like, it's, they couldn't even get,
is it really?
No, it's not, but okay. It sounds like it. If this is apocalypse music, I want to get eaten. I don't want to be there.
Also, like, yeah, this is what Jesus, this is it exogenic? I forget the name for something that's actually coming from a source in the universe. Like, you find out that this is actually Jesus blaring Georgie rock from his gramophone, which I thought was cool, you know, something you wind up and doesn't need any electricity to run. You know,
yeah, but it's problematic in a society that is plagued by late night kazoo sessions. I feel like, please go back and listen to this. I looked up the time code. It's 5:45, right around there when this scene and this music kicks in. It's awful. It's god awful.
Yeah, it's bad.
They needed to lay a kazoo track over this. Like that would have properly conveyed how bad this music is, but also somehow made it better in its badness.
You know, it's funny. My son cleaned up his room last weekend, and somehow in all this mess, he found like a fucking Chuck E. Cheese kazoo, and he's been playing it. Like, I hear it coming from his room all the fucking time. We could make that happen. We could be the change you want to see in the world. We could lay a sick kazoo track, solo track under this stuff. I enjoyed the opening shot because they had, like, I fucking love like steampunk hillbilly tech, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's what I've always wanted to see more of from The Walking Dead. And this guy peddling what I think is a bicycle-powered washing machine was just chef's kiss.
There's this dude peddling
furiously, and it's attached to this kind of like 50-gallon style wash tub, something like Walter White would dissolve a kid in with acid. And he's peddling his belt-driven thing, and I think it is. I think they're doing laundry. It's like instead of putting a quarter in the machine, you give old Bobby a glass of shine and just tell him to pedal. Put on the kazoo. Yeah.
And, that works. I mean, that's effective.
Yeah, I like it. I like it.
I wonder what the like caloric value of the energy that he's expending washing these clothes is.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it's like more efficient to use the old like washboard and tub, or is it more efficient to like use your leg muscles to pedal an agitator? I don't know.
Well, you got to get the walkers involved, right? We talked about the mill last week, where you could just attach them to the washing machine.
It does seem like there's a hell of a lot more manual labor happening at the kingdom than in Alexander. Alexander has a massive solar panels. Alexander has a windmill.
They probably have a water mill. Competent blacksmith too is the point.
Yeah.
Hilltop does not have one of those.
Yeah, it's like, you want me to build a windmill? I mean, seeing a windmill, like, I don't understand the principles in which they operate.
I think building windmills is harder than it seems. You gotta get some angles, some good angles on the blades.
Yeah, plus I'm thinking, like, I've always wondered, like, how, like, especially those massive Dutch jobs that were built, like, hundreds of years ago. Mm-hmm. How do you affix those final arms? Like, what if a stiff wind breaks, picks up while you're in the middle of the construction? Like, it's like you can, like, crane them up and just bzz, 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 like you can now. Like, there's got to be a lot of thought put into that shit. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's probably, people are smart. They built pyramids like 10,000 years ago. They can figure this shit out.
Then we go back to Daryl taking Carol on a tour of his booby-trapped killing fields. He's been out here longer than Carol expected. And Henry's going to apprentice with the know-nothing blacksmith. Mm-hmm. She asked Daryl to come back to babysit Henry and give him some survival guidance. And Daryl refuses, telling her that Henry's going to have to learn the hard way just like they all had to.
Gotta get them stars out of your eyes, kid.
Yeah.
Crossbow's a snake. Difficulty of that's got to be pretty hard.
Yeah, yeah.
Makes me wonder why you just don't walk over there with your machete and just, like, you know, chop its head off, because that's what's happening anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's a case of, do you want to dull your machete or do you want to ruin a crossbow bolt?
Yeah, yeah. Plus a challenge. Hitting something the size of a middle finger from 30 feet away. It's moving. It's got to appeal to Daryl.
Mm-hmm. And then the road group arrives at the new survivor's old camp, I think, out in the middle of a field, which has been totally destroyed by walkers. They take out their frustration on the walkers who are remaining. Sadiq picks up two recorders. So you got a kid with a kazoo and two recorders floating around this community now. As well as declaring that, and the survivors try to pick up their weapons. Michonne refuses to let the weapons go and also declares that she's not going to Hilltop with them. That sets off prison tats. Nobody trusts anyone, and reluctantly they all agree to continue weaponless to the Hilltop and then head off to find shelter.
Yeah, man. I thought this was a shitty encampment. Like, I don't buy it that these people camped out in the middle of this open field on Alexandria and Hilltop's doorstop, essentially. This is less than a day's ride away, and just live there. Like, what was their, like... Did they just retreat to the cargo crate when zombies came around? Or, like, I guess that would kind of sort of work, but then you're trapped. You can't ever get outside. It's not like you can fight from inside that position.
Yeah.
It offers concealment but not cover for bullets. It didn't feel like it was that lived in by people for that long.
Right. Well, they talk about all the communities they've been to, so, you know, it's possible that maybe this is a pretty new setup for them, but it makes me wonder how they even got the cargo container out there, because it's not like, oh, there are several cargo containers here, and it's obviously like a warehouse, like a storage yard or something. No, it's just a single cargo container in the middle of a field.
And they said it's their rig, which I thought implied that there would be like maybe they drove a semi there, but it's in the middle of a fucking field in a ring of forests, and there was no rig.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, so like what their rig? Where's their rig? I don't see their rig. This story doesn't check out.
No.
So I don't know. But it's also like I don't know what these people think they're going to do. They don't have their guns. It's three on five, and one of them is concussed, and the other people do have guns and weapons and all the other, you know, knives and other stuff. Like, what do they think they're going to do? Like, demand their knives back? Or...
No, they clearly can't.
Yeah, like, it's just, I don't know, it's weird. We saw Rick and his company make some pretty fucking toothless threats, over, you know, when they're in situations like this. So, I don't know, maybe they thought they could do something, but... It's just this Magna girl just seems like she's driving me fucking crazy, and the rest of the group too.
Yeah, I have problems with the new survivors too, but we'll get there.
Okay.
Or you know, the way that the story's portraying them, the mm-hmm. writers are. Mm-hmm. So then we go to Aaron ambushing Jesus in the field, and Jesus kicking his ass, and turns out it's all part of Aaron's combat training. He's not supposed to be training like this. He's breaking protocol to do it. Afterward, they talk about how Michonne has become a bit of a tyrant since Rick's disappearance, and they see a flare go up, and they find Rosita, who says, "I left Eugene in a barn," and the walkers close in, so they decide to leave Eugene, taking Rosita back to the hilltop.
What do you think about Aaron essentially being like Kato from Pink Panther?
That's hilarious. In my notes, Pink Panther's Jesus.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And also, like, so did the protocol, is that about them fighting? Because I thought the protocols are something like the hilltop and Alexandrians cannot meet, or.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. He's not supposed to be training like with Jesus.
Like, when the hilltop riders show up, they seem very hostile to the Alexandrians. Like, you know.
The hilltop riders.
Right, like they're very stiffly formal, kind of like the Starks and the Lannisters during the good old Bobby B days. Like, they hate each other, but they have to be cordial because that's what the lords and ladies demand of them. But there's not a lot of bad blood there, and I still am like, how the hell did it go so bad between Alexandria and Hilltop of all places?
Yeah, I don't know.
After the death of Rick, that knitted them all together. But I don't know. I do like Aaron and Jesus. I like Aaron being a badass with his cyborg arm. Mm-hmm. I do believe that when we stopped watching, they established that. I know that Aaron was gay. Uh-huh.
I think they established
because he was married to another man. Yeah. But I think Jesus revealed that he was at least bisexual, if not gay as well. So like and that doesn't mean that they have to pair off, just like, you know, it's kind of cliche that if a man and a woman are thrown into a situation in a movie, it's like, oh, they have to be romantically entangled. But on the other hand, I do like shipping, and I do like matchy-matchy, and I think they're a good-looking couple. Mm-hmm. And there's a fine line between rolling on the ground fighting and the other thing you roll on the ground on.
I mean, I've seen the internet video, sure. Sure.
So I don't know. Is there love in the air here, Jim? Is there more than Aaron flying through the air? Is there love too?
Yeah, yeah. The kind of half cyborg, half human love I can get behind.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
And you know, Kato and Clouseau, one of the famous gay couples of all time. So they're playing homage. They're playing homage to that.
All right. Daryl cooks a snake for Carol and Henry. Henry's unimpressed and argues with Carol about not needing a chaperone. Later that night, Carol gives Daryl a half-assed haircut as they talk about what Rick's disappearance means to him and why he's still looking.
Did she just give him bangs? Because she's
I think
like,
she gave him a bang. Like yeah. One half of bangs.
This is the I don't know what kind of haircut she
this
thought
is like
she
a
was...
Katy Perry circa. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. 2008 haircut. I don't even know if she was a thing then, but yeah.
Just like cut a single lock off your forehead. There, done. Perfect. Uh-huh. Perfection.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's like if you put Miley Cyrus in a cyberpunk game.
Okay.
That's the haircut she would have.
All right. Sure.
The asymmetrical bangs. Yeah.
Yeah. Probably some multicolors involved, uh-huh. But yeah.
For sure. And then as they eat, Henry tries to get Daryl to open up about his scar, and it just drives him further away. Which scar is he talking about? He hasn't noticed the actual X
That's
scar
what
yet.
I thought. That's like when he's like, how'd you get that scar? I'm like, what the fuck scar is he talking about? Later on, we see it, and I'm not sure if this is, you know, because also there is there's a pretty rough day-night transition here.
I feel like these scenes are out of order. Like they swapped this too. And the scene where he notices the scar.
I thought so. I thought that they might have been very loose about when was daytime and when was morning and all that kind of stuff. And they re-edited it into the editing bay and it just didn't quite work because I have no fucking clue what scar he saw on the exposed flesh of Daryl that we saw. Because I was looking at his hand. I was like, did Daryl have a scar on his cheek or something that I don't remember? No, maybe. As far as I can tell.
Yeah, I don't know. His face is so dirty, it's hard to tell. But
there's so many things. Like, has Carol talked about this event that was served as the fracture between Alex? So does he kind of know when he's just kind of starting? But that's a very personal conversation to start in on with. But there's so many other things, like the fact that, you know, Michonne doesn't know about Maggie, the fact that Michonne is putting her foot down about participating in the Kingdom's Fair, which seems bizarre to forbid your citizens from attending. Like, there's a lot of things we don't know about these relationships, and I don't know, the scar is another weird one.
Yeah. Then we go back to Sadiq sleeping as Michonne stands guard over the camp. She hears something in the darkness and finds the piano man. Yes, I'm giving him a new nickname. I don't know what to call this guy. Stradivarius, rummaging around for noisemakers. When he turns around, she chops his Stradivarius in half, and he screams, and everyone comes running.
I actually got excited because I thought she killed the dude. Oh, and yeah. I'm like, well, now this is a fucking complication. This is going to be some interesting shit because, like, is Michonne justified when he, you know, like, it's dark. I don't want to sound too, like, you know, police department-y, but it's dark. She told him to put down what he's holding. He had understandable reasons for not wanting to do that, but instead of, like, being a normal person, he jerkily spins around with this, you know, dark object in his hands, and I thought she might have killed him, and, like, that was going to cause a real fucking ruckus, but instead, she just, you know, wrecks millions of dollars worth of audio gear, I guess.
Yeah, that's Stradivarius is one of those collectibles in the apocalypse that you really have to hold on to for a long time to see its value return.
Yeah, but if you do, holy shit.
Right, right.
Holy
if you can
shit,
preserve a Stradivarius through the apocalypse,
yeah,
you're a billionaire.
Your family's not going to have to work. As soon as the economy resumes functioning, right. Give it 100, 200 years, your descendants are going to be wealthy beyond their wildest dreams.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what else to say about this. We'll get to the sort of ramifications, the aftermath of these actions here in a bit.
It just, it, you know what it leads? It leads to a Dale Watch speech is what it does. It gives this guy, like, you know, who's been coded as like an intellectual, a chance to like espouse and opine and talk about all the things he read in the book from Sapiens. That's the fallout.
I was going to say, I think a writer has read Sapiens.
I guarantee they have, although they drew some interesting conclusions from it.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday, covering the Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwe is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Thank you.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Yeah. So Henry goes looking for Daryl, and he finds Walker instead. He also finds Daryl, but Daryl tells him to go back to camp. He doesn't. Instead, he follows Daryl to a bunch of walkers tangled up in Daryl's traps. Daryl tells him to stay back, but Henry jumps in to help when Daryl is almost eaten and gets a vicious foot wound for his trouble.
Mm. Steps in that, like, the world's smallest Pungi trap.
I couldn't get behind the threat to Daryl here. I wasn't buying it. Like, you got a man who's very capable. You're not going to bite through Daryl's boots. It's not going to happen.
Right.
Like, even if they were weak boots, they're so shit encrusted at this point.
And they got,
like,
three layers of rabbit fur on the inside of them now, too. So
right. Yeah, those spongy walker teeth are not getting through that.
No.
The other thing is, I love when it takes him a good 30 seconds to remember, oh, I have a second knife. When his go-to move is the double knife kill.
Yeah, and when he gets to his dog to rescue it, he sits there and tries to untie this complicated knot instead of just taking the knot, multiple knives on him and cutting the dog free.
Yeah, like he's trying to teach Henry a lesson here. Like, he's hamming it up.
I don't know.
Oh, like, Henry, look at this. I can't quite reach my knife, Henry.
Yeah.
Oh no, Henry, stay back. No, stay there. Watch me. Look at me,
right.
Henry.
And Kay, he worked it out with Carol in advance, and Carol's doing Overwatch to make sure they don't both get killed. But no, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe Daryl can make anything in the zombie apocalypse except for twine. Like, yeah. Rope, he just fucking hates braiding shit, man. Like, you know, if he can't pull it out of an animal, he doesn't want to make it. So rope is precious. He's not going to cut. He will stop to untie a dog for 30 seconds instead of cutting it free. It is weird. And also, yeah, Carol's just watching. Like, she's seeing them bond, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know. This scene, you know, it's fine. It's good, even, maybe. I don't know. I really enjoy some of the special effects and walker stuff they do in this show from time to time. And this is one of those scenes, like when that walker tears off its own foot in the trap to get at Daryl. I love that stuff. I'm a fan of the taboo when it comes to horror. And,
oh yeah,
you know, ripping off feet is pretty cool.
Yeah, and the fact that the dog's always got a hand or a foot he's bringing back to camp for,
yeah,
I guess, Daryl's share. Some of that stuff is pretty good.
Uh-huh. The other thing about the scene is at the end, you know, they're investigating Henry's wound or whatever. Daryl's trying to see if he's okay, and he says, no, it's just a scratch or just a scrape or something. Lesson number one, kid, if you're going to learn anything, you never say that in a zombie movie because... You're dead. He's got dead man's foot. he's a goner in two episodes tops.
You're either dead or Daryl's gonna throw a piece of twine around your knee and take your leg off right below, you know.
Yeah, he's gonna lose the foot machete. For sure.
Yeah.
But he might lose it all. Like Jim from the first mm-hmm. season. Yeah, first
yeah.
season.
Yeah.
You know, he thought it was just a scratch too. Look where mm-hmm. he is.
It was a circular shaped scratch in the form of teeth, but sure. Yeah, Jim. It's just a scratch.
Yeah, it looked like a scratch to me. All right. Jesus asks how Rosita is, and Tara says, "I shall be fine." Tara brings up the fact that Jesus, has been avoiding the hilltop, which is not great considering he's been chosen the leader of the community. She then gives him a speech about how everyone here needs him. But really, really, I think we all know it's about her desire to dress as an elf at the hilltop's upcoming Ren Fair.
Oh, yeah. She's all about that.
And then she informs him that she's going out till in the morning to look for Eugene. A Ren Fair? Is Walking Dead going to try and pull off a non-laughable Ren Fair?
I actually hope they don't. I hope it's just a total Ren Fair with the flute music and Jerry in his finest quilted armor, and they got the recorder. Yeah, they're going to show up for all this stuff, and it's going to be fucking amazing. It's going to be fucking, they're going to do some jousting with these fucking spears and the BMX armor. I think it's definitely going to be just like that. Carol's going to be dressed up like fucking who's the Robin Hood lady? It's not Lady Elaine. That's from Mr. Rogers.
Gwen.
Marion. Maid Marion. She's going to be dressed up like Maid Marion. I think Jesus, though, in this leader, and also I think it's funny that he's just called the hilltop leader. It's not the president. It's not the governor. It's not the chief. It's just the leader. That's as fucking generic as you can get. I think Jesus wants the same deal that Ezekiel's got. Like, I'm just a figurehead. I go out there, I inspire people with my kung fu and my awesome hair and my cool beard and the fact that my name is Jesus and I look like Jesus mm-hmm. and I tell people to follow the golden rule and Tara does all the work. Like Ezekiel, I don't think Ezekiel does shit except for make stunning pronouncements to people and inspire them to good. And I think that Jesus is jealous of Ezekiel.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
He wants a Zeke deal and he's not getting it.
Uh-huh.
He's getting the administrator deal, and he doesn't want it. And I wouldn't either. That just shit seems tedious.
Yeah, and they're dropping a lot of crumbs here about the dispute between the hilltop and Alexandria. Just, you know, with, I don't know, Jesus, like, avoiding being here. And
trying to keep the lines of communication open, implying that if it wasn't for his out-of-protocol efforts, there would be no lines of communication.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, it's certainly not above The Walking Dead to backtrack on a lot of plot and say, no, we're actually going to readdress the same thing we addressed last season.
Yep.
Just from, you know, five other characters' perspectives.
Sure. Yeah. I need to see the blacksmith's perspective on all this.
Right. What does he feel about the rift between Negan and Maggie and Michonne?
What does Substantial Bow Girl think about a competent, highly proficient, impressive bow girl that mm-hmm. has showed up out of nowhere? Like I need to see this character drama. Like she's got to be shook.
What's Daryl gonna think when he comes back and suddenly the bow women are better than he is?
Yeah, you got a fucking crossbow. Like I can shoot these things like fucking Legolas. You're taking 30 seconds to reload, old man. Get out of here with your one shaved lock.
Yeah,
go. I don't know. Go make a ponytail or something.
I can't. My bangs are gone. It's just like all ponytail and then one flop.
Yeah, down the front. Just tickling his forehead. It's gotta be miserable.
Okay, let's move on. I gotta say, I am so looking forward to seeing this Ren Fair in action. Do you think we're gonna get to see it this half season, or are we gonna have to wait another 10 episodes?
Man, it seems ridiculous to keep the fair from, but like, yeah, like this whole thing with the whispering zombies and the mysterious X feels like something that, like, it would be, if you're going to do the Renaissance Fair, you're either going to do it at the mid-season finale climax mm-hmm. or the real season finale. So yeah. I feel like we might get a lot of late season Morgulizing between the various Hilltop, Alexandria, Kingdom Rift, between the fucking new guys and girls. Like, I think there's going to be a lot of pacing in place, but I could be pleasantly surprised because they haven't done anything with this Whispering Zombie stuff. There's also the idea that, you know, Maggie's off of Georgie doing something cool, you know, because she's filming another TV series now. I'm kind of like all in for it, and I can see that there's a lot more plot at hand than there is going into most mid-season things, but still,
sure.
Still, 9 episodes, where is this Renfest going to drop? It's because it's gonna. It's gonna. Gonna.
Yeah. All right, then we go back over to Henry noticing Daryl's scars, which we think was supposed to happen a scene ago, and Henry's able to convince Daryl that he should come back to the kingdom because Carol misses him. Essentially, that's all there is to it.
Yeah, he also says that Daryl mentioned something also interesting, that there seems to be more and more walkers of late.
How is that possible?
Dude, that's what I've been saying. Like, where the fuck are all these things coming from? It's got to be related to the Whispering Zombies. Like, yeah. they're leading them or using them or something. Because, yeah, we're late in the apocalypse. I don't know how the zombie science work. Don't zombies eventually just kind of rot into complete ineffectuality?
Especially in damp environments like
Georgia.
Yeah,
like a swamp.
Or
well,
wherever
this is,
the hell they are.
Yeah, this is Washington, which is famously a fucking swamp.
Yeah.
I would imagine, yeah, during those hot summers, you'd really degrade. But I don't know. I guess you're also like, you know, is this some kind of World War Z situation where you got like hordes of Canadian zombies migrating from the north after winter? Do you have a whole bunch of dry, dusty Central American zombies shambling up from the south when you know, migrating there? Like, I don't know. But it does seem like, what, we're 5 to 7 years along? Like, some of that stuff should... They should just not be able to move. Their heads are so soft now, you can penetrate them with a wrist rocket. Like,
yeah,
like taking steps should be smashing some of these bones every once in a while. Yeah, mm-hmm. You can just pull your foot off by like tugging on it against a loop. Like, these things are jello.
Yeah, jello and toothpicks. Jelly heads. That's the new name for the walkers.
Yeah, and that's sickos or jelly heads. Sickos.
Sickos, yeah.
Why has everybody got to reinvent the fucking wheel? Every group.
Because... The writers of this show enjoy coming up with new names.
Mm-hmm. I can see some regional differences, like pop, cola, soda, mm-hmm. You know. But like, seriously,
but you
every
would think
fucking
it'd be part
group.
Of the national news cycle, right? And that there would be a standardized way of talking about the dumb fucks, the Zed heads.
Isn't that job one for Georgie? Like, hey, we got to get on the same page about what we're calling these deals. Like, walkers, deaders, rotters, stinkers, sickos. What are we doing here?
Biters.
Yeah. We got to get some. We got to get on the same page about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Take first steps towards society. Come together on that at least. All right. Piano Man frets over his destroyed Stradivarius. And goes on a tear about how Homo sapiens and Neanderthals bonded over a 40,000-year-old flute and how music unites the world. Michonne is moved but decides to go ahead with the plan as she sees them off in the morning. Sadiq spills the beans about Maggie leaving Hilltop before being interrupted by a herd of walkers. Michonne is forced to give the new group back their weapons. And this group, who got overrun and lost Bernie... or whoever the hell that guy is now suddenly super competent, crack shots with their slingshots until their old friend shows up as a walker and Maggie puts him down and they escape.
Yeah.
This is the problem. This is the believability problem I have with this new group. Uh-huh. Not being able to withstand an attack inside their cargo container, inside their rig, and yet when they're given weapons, they're shown to be extraordinary badasses.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
I have a hard time, you know, just bringing those two concepts together in my mind. They could be badasses, but also overrun by a measly amount of walkers that we saw in the scene where we first noticed them or first were introduced, with like 8 walkers around. It wasn't that big a herd.
Yeah, I think you're right, and they could have done a better job establishing these characters. Like, if we saw, like, you know, you can tell a story of badasses are just being overrun by sheer quantities. Like, you know, highly competent bow girl could have been on her last arrow. The very highly competent wrist rocketeer could have been on her last rock. They could have, obviously they had someone that's wounded with them, so that was slowing them down. Like, they could have done a better job of showing that these guys are actually competent. They're just at the end of the rope, you know? And we've seen our group, time and time again in those situations where someone has to save them at the last minute. It's so weird to have them being in very poorly, almost red machete style, like walker melee, and then just sudden upgrade in competency. Mm-hmm. The other thing way you could have done is you could have told the story of, like, I don't know how Bernie shambling out galvanized them into action. Like, you know, they're kind of like hobbits. They're all kind of helpless, but then they see one of their comrades die, and then they get out their daggers and their frying pans and start going to work. But you're right. Not totally buying how fucking amazingly competent they are. But it does make sense. Anyone that survived mm-hmm. this long at this point, you know, we're all fresh out of the season 4 or season 5 Alexandrians that were just drinking fucking, you know, candy wine behind a cold rolled steel and don't know how to fight zombies. Like, they all should be this competent baseline.
Right. And I think, like, the writers realized that somewhere along the way. They're like, yeah. Oh, well, I don't even know if they realized that should have been the case from the beginning. And, mm-hmm. We maybe should have made that scene better. It feels like a weird backing into, like, or a lack of consistency in the storytelling. Like, they want this group to both be so endangered that they have to put themselves at the mercy of Alexandria, but also they want another group of badasses.
Mm-hmm.
And they do not do the work early on in the season that is required. Or I guess last episode is when we met them. The last episode, mm-hmm. they didn't do the work to show us that both things could be true.
Yeah, I agree.
They did exactly what they needed to do for the story beat they were going for in the moment without any regard toward what they wanted to do in the future. And I feel like that's one of The Walking Dead's biggest failures, is just failing to lead into the stuff that they wanted to do later on.
Yeah. And on the other hand, this half season has been way better than previous seasons in the last few years that I've watched Walking Dead. So it's like, I don't want to harp on it too much, but yeah, I think you're right. I almost wonder if they knew that they were going to do this time leap. Like, if this was something where, like, they had a cast mutiny where Andrew Lincoln's like, fuck this. I don't want to be here at the half season. Lauren Cohen's like, oh, we can just do that. Well, I've got another offer. Put me on that gravy train, too. Because it felt like they were wanting to build around, like, Maggie and Daryl and, like, Jesus and Carol. Like, some of these, like, previously B-tier, have them take the step forward, and then something might have happened and they were scrambling to kind of like figure out how to deal with that. Because it didn't feel like that was the plan. It felt very hasty.
And I don't blame him too much for that. You know, like, losing a starring actor mm-hmm. is a tough thing for any show to deal with.
Right.
And, you know, but a show also that is 10 years in, at this point, ought to know, or 11 years in at this point, ought to mm-hmm. have contingency plans for that, sure. right? Like, oh, we've got a clause in your contract. If you're re-upping for the 11th year, mm-hmm. we've mm-hmm. got a clause in your contract that says if you are wanting out of this, you have to come back and film your X amount of episodes or death scenes or whatever, because we can't just have you leave and decide that, you know, in an off season and we're just fucked.
Yeah. Maybe the clause is 5 episodes.
yeah.
They got the damn 5 episodes and that was it.
Absolutely. I don't know if you noticed this, but when they are fighting these walkers in, I don't know, this little area with all the warehouses and cars and stuff, the walkers in the background that are just like, completely docile, like they're being attacked from every side. Walkers mm-hmm. are coming in as ferociously as you can imagine mm-hmm. until Bernie shows up, and then Bernie does like his 15 minutes of fame here for a good minute and a half or something.
Yeah,
and the other walkers are just shambling around in the background doing nothing.
They're whispering, "Give him his space. They need this moment. He's obviously looking at his shirt. He's obviously important." I also like how tenderly Michonne killed him, because when she goes up behind her, that big samurai sword, I'm like, oh my god, like, Magda's going to see this blade come out of his mouth and she's going to lose her fucking shit. But like, Michonne killed this guy like a like an ex-lover. Like just, yeah. just like the most tender, just with the tip, just mm-hmm. did the old just the tip trick with him, and good night, sweet zombie prince. It was actually kind of cool of her mm-hmm. because I think she could have really traumatized Prison Tad if she wanted to.
Absolutely.
And I also love like these fucking wrist rockets, man. I got like I bought a couple of these back for a camping trip like 6 years ago with my son and his friend. They're so much fun. And like, I also think they're probably like really super efficient zombie killers, especially of the like, you know, pumpkin ripe, sun ripened melon head zombies that we've gotten these recent years.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can put a hole through like an aluminum can with them. Why not put a hole through a zombie head? So I nice. Thought that was pretty cool. And again, this is the first like, I think, really competent bow person we've seen on The Walking Dead. She's like fucking Legolasing it up out there. I forget what her name is. Yukuri or something like that. Yokita.
I don't know any of the new group's actual real names.
Magna. Magma's the only one I know for sure.
Magma?
Yeah, Magna.
Magna.
Is the prison tat. Okay. Yeah.
She is a bit of a hothead. I wouldn't be surprised
She's
if they called her Magma.
Liquid hothead Magma, yeah.
All right, Carol wakes up to find Daryl packing for their journey back to the kingdom. She's pleased.
She's very wry because Daryl and Henry thought they got away with something, and you don't pull something on the apex mom. Yeah. you don't put shit over on her. She's gonna shut all that stuff down. But yeah, her kind of knowing smile at Daryl trying to play dumb about what happened last night. It's pretty good. Pretty good.
Yep. No, it's great. I love Carol. And I specifically love Carol and Daryl.
She's like with this long hair, she's halfway to being like a Stephen King character. Like she seems like someone who like has ancient arcane powers, or she's there to show up to cleanse your house of exorcists. She's got like it's she's
cleanse
looking
your house of exorcists. I love it. Get those exorcists out of here, we don't need them.
Not exorcists, what is it, poltergeists. Yeah, she cleans your house of Catholic priests, so then she can make room so she can get rid of the poltergeists. Catholic priests don't got shit on poltergeists, they're more of a demon guys. But no, I feel like she's both mythical and mystical, and I'm digging it. I'm digging it.
Over under mid-season dreadlocks on Carol.
Might need another season on those.
Okay.
Might need another season.
All right. I'm waiting. I'm waiting for him. So then Michonne and the group continue on to Hilltop as Michonne sympathizes with the newcomers over the loss of their friends. Still, she sticks to her plan and leaves them to head back after asking Sadiq a few more questions about Maggie. However, a couple of very serious dudes ride up with a message from Hilltop. They have Rosita. She's been injured. And Michonne decides, I'm going to accompany the new group to Hilltop to deal with that situation.
Well, this is also the scene where Michonne finds out that Maggie's gone. She actually is off with Georgie, apparently, the lady with the two Secret Service.
Oh, do they explicitly say that?
They do, yeah. Okay. Yeah, she's off Georgie, some faraway place, another compound, trying to work to make the world a better place, which I find fascinating. Like, I really wish we knew more about this kind of like new emerging central government, maybe. The key to the future people, like that seems like a solid set that I'd like to know more about.
I'm hoping we get there. Is that why Jesus is listening to these Georgie records? Is he like reminiscing about the times when Maggie was there to help him out?
Yeah, and also, like, he's, like, man, it feels like Maggie's been gone forever and just, like, just left. Because also, like, Jesus, like, Tara remarks, like, are you ever going to move into Maggie's space? Like, but he's working in, like, the reception area outside, I think, the governor, the leader's office. Mm-hmm. I wish I knew more about the situation and the timeline. But they're just spooning it out real slow.
And so everybody thinks they hear something in the woods, but it turns out to be nothing.
Oh, I bet. It's whispering zombies.
Yeah. I mean, obviously. Although whispering zombies.
How the deaf girl would be the one that detect the whispering zombies?
Man, I'm pretty sure she heard or saw something in the
saw
woods.
Saw something.
Saw something move. You know, it would not shock me to see The Walking Dead lean into the idea that she has some super visual powers.
She's like a reverse Daredevil.
Right. That would not shock me at all.
Okay.
For this show.
Why not?
Can we talk about maybe the most ridiculous thing I've seen on The Walking Dead, when Aquaman and his old prospector buddy Seamus ride out of the mist on this road. Like,
yeah,
what kind of fish scale armor,
dude,
is he rocking? Who made it? Did he find this? Was this in the Natural History Museum?
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's the only armor they could find to bring back to the blacksmith. But it also weird that, like, so since when did Hilltop have knights? Like, she looked at him and instantly said, "You're from Hilltop. Those spears, you're from Hilltop." I'm like, why the fuck would you assume that? Why wouldn't you say from the kingdom? Because to me, they looked like kingdom guys. Like, with, like, you know, now they got metal armor and said, like, just what I was saying. Like, why are they still running around this plastic armor? Like, shit, man. Like, can't you upgrade to that? Like, find some fucking corrugated aluminum or whatever. Bolt that stuff on. But they're actually doing it. I don't know. Maybe everybody's on this. That's why Alexandria doesn't want to go to the Renaissance Fair. They're just like, hey, you know what? I don't do this knight shit.
I can't compete with the armor they've got, frankly.
Yeah. We're more about the softer side of cotton than we are with your rigid fucking body armor. And we can't do it with the spears and horses. So fuck off with your flutes and your jesters and your winches. Not going to do it.
Your turkey legs.
I want your damn turkey legs, your giant ears of buttered corn. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why Daryl's doing all the skinning. He's going to set up a booth.
Oh, yeah.
Genuine District of Columbia possum skins.
Who's the glassblower of the community? Like, making the little hand-blown dragons?
I want to say, I can see Eugene. Can't you see Eugene wearing a Gandalf hat? And like a D20 shirt, and he's just sitting there in front of his blowtorch, and he's just holding court and, you know, explaining the process with 30 words when 5 would do. Yeah. Yeah. I can totally see
God,
Eugene.
I can't wait. I can't wait for this.
It is guaranteed
to be awful. Renfair.
I hope it's like one of those things, like, you know, like Downton Abbey every once in a while would do, like, they had the Christmas episode. It was always just like ridiculous fan service. And, you know, I hope they go that, like, it's a whole hour of just the Ren Faire.
Yes.
We get to see everybody. We get to see everybody's shtick. We get to see the games. We get to see the jousting. Ezekiel's holding court with Carol up there, turkey leg in one hand. I got to see all this. I got to.
And the biggest conflict is, like, you know, like a Robin Hood men in tights, or frankly, Robin Hood.
Yeah.
You know, where they've got the archery contest, right? Mm-hmm. Or Brave, like, this, you know. Standard bullshit.
It's going to be substantial bow girl.
That's the biggest conflict. Not
substantial bow girl versus highly competent bow girl.
There you go. Yeah. And then Daryl comes in and splits everybody's arrows down the middle.
But he's disqualified because he can't use a crossbow.
Right. But he does it from like 600 yards away.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Like, he does it from the woods. It's tournament legal, but a crossbow, you have to be twice the distance for it to count. Yeah. So if they're at 50 paces, you got to be at 100. All right.
God, I want to see this so bad. They've set up like a perfect storm of shitty Ren Faire for me in my mind. That almost certainly cannot deliver on.
I that's what I'm saying. I'm like, also, how does the super bus fit into it?
The super bus.
Yeah, like Ezekiel's throwing a Renaissance Faire that involves three buses welded together. I gotta see. You're right. We are actually getting our hopes up for this show. It's a bad idea. What are we doing? What are we doing? You're gonna roll up on the Ren Faire. You're gonna see King Ezekiel's big Ren Faire. Welcome to the kingdom's Ren Faire, and it's gonna fade to black. And then 6 years later.
Oh God, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's what they're gonna do. Another flash forward. Judith's gonna be 13. The Negan will be inexplicably the leader of the Hilltop. They won't explain it for another 8 episodes. He'll have a question mark carved into his back because who the hell knows? Or he'll have 3 P's. He'll have 3 P's just to get the Heath access.
Did he get loans too?
Huh?
Did he get loans too?
I'm talking about the pair. I'm talking about Heath. Like, wasn't that what was on his like key card? PPP? Yeah. Just to bring that mystery back around. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And Georgie will get flying on a helicopter with Rick. And just like, we'll have a whole other, like, what the fuck is going on for 8 episodes?
And then I guess we go to the final scene here where we're at the Hilltop, finally. Henry wonders if Enid is going to recognize him. He's clearly got a crush on her.
Mm. Isn't Enid like 23 now, though?
She's got to be, so she was like 14-ish.
Yeah, like I think her
five, 6 years ago.
Yeah, they were 14 to 16. Yeah, so she's got to be in her early 20s. And Henry, I don't know, is Henry supposed to be 18?
No.
Yeah, I thought Henry's like 15. It's going to be a real Anakin Padme situation here.
I mean, it's apocalypse age, right? Like,
that's true. No rules in apocalypse. No court of law to say this is predatory.
Yeah, we'll see what kind of court of law Maggie set up when it comes to child
relationships. What kind of protocols are being violated here? Sure.
Yeah, I have a feeling it's not going to resemble what we know in our modern society.
You know, I do think it's cool that, like, you know, despite all the conflict and stuff, and maybe this is a small concern too, that at the end of this episode, you got the real sense with the music playing and everything that the gang's fucking back together. Mm-hmm. You know, like, maybe it's going to take Michonne and Maggie a while to figure things out, but like in Daryl, Aaron, Jesus, Tara's mind, they're still a team, and they're going to take business, whatever the problem is. We got the gang back together, and we're going to be just fine. Yeah. However, the problem there is that's going to take all the dramatic tension out of it, right? You know, you've set up this giant conflict between the communities, and if the community, like, if there's no rancor amongst the community members themselves, then, like, what kind of beef do you actually have? It's a personal beef between Michonne and Maggie. Who cares about that? Which they quashed two episodes ago. What?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's clearly flared back up in the last 6 years or so.
Gotta see. Maybe there's are there people running around with O's on their back, and this was some kind of demented post-apocalyptic warrior tribe that tried to force them to play in human tic-tac-toe?
Oh yeah, it's like a Hollywood Squares situation.
Yeah, instead of A's and B's, you get X's and O's. Uh-huh. And circle takes the square. All right, I'm done. Do you got more stuff?
I didn't even
this?
Recap this scene, but who gives a shit?
You didn't?
Do you think they gave everybody follows this dog off? Do you think they gave the dog a pair of like Eugene's dirty socks or something, and he's just like smelling him from miles away?
I don't think he even needs it to track him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He
Eugene just
it.
Has a unique pungency that the dogs can track. That mullet just generates its own juices and stews.
Oh boy. Yeah, but that's it. That's it. We're gonna go off on a mission to try and find Eugene at the end of this episode.
Is it the mid-season finale next week?
Yeah, I think it's... Oh, shit, this is 9:07, isn't it? Yeah,
yeah.
It would be.
There's no way we're going to get to Renaissance Fair at the end of next week.
Or Dreadlocks, yeah.
Or
I think
Dreadlocks,
you're right.
Yeah. We're going to have to... Another flash forward. But we'll see. We'll see. Hopefully, you'll join us there. Please send in feedback to the Walking Dead or Watching Dead at baldmove.com, because we are after the... I haven't actually seen how much feedback we've got. We might consider it at the end of 9:08, or we might, if we have enough of it, just do a little mini feedback episode in between before we start resuming on season 9. So look forward to that. I actually am kind of interested. I can't wait to see how they close, because they usually try to do something big. Yeah. I'm very curious to see what that something big looks like in this context. When do you think we'll see Maggie again? Next episode?
Boy.
Or
no, because they're going out to look for Eugene. I think it's going to be the next half season before we see her.
Okay, because I thought maybe, because, like, you know, she didn't have to do much filming this, so maybe they had enough time that they could get her back for the next season, you know, since they do that, so they split filming on that stuff, so maybe. I don't know. Okay. I'm thinking, what do you think you're over under on episodes until we see her again is? We're going to have to wait till the end of season 9 or like early in season 9B?
Yeah, I don't think you can go the whole half season without seeing her. I think we're looking at like seeing her within the first one or two episodes of the next of season 9B.
Yeah. I'm interested in how they do, because now that you've got everything split up between the three communities, it must be hard to split everyone's screen time and get around to everybody. You know, and I know that's something on a large cast show. Sometimes people get cranky when they don't get their scenes and lines. And like Rosita, especially until these last episode, we didn't see her at all in season 9. So I'm curious to see how they continue to balance the screen time and the dialogue and the plot weight and all that kind of stuff, especially with all these fucking new guys. Their goddamn half a Stradivarius doing nobody any good. They'll turn into a loot. They're going to modify it into a loot.
There
a strata loot before the Ren Faire. All right. Send out email to watchingdead@baldmove.com. We'll be back next week with the mid-season finale. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Have a great week.